All right, everyone, welcome to the podcast, or a podcast, the podcast. I don't know which one it is. We still have not found a name for what myself and Zach Bloxham are doing here on this little half-hour segment that we talk about BYU sports. We've thrown around a few ideas, a few names, haven't figured it out yet. We're going to get there. Don't worry. So it's, like I said, myself, Jake Welch, and the Zach Bloxham. Zach, how are you doing this evening?
And after that Millennial Friday, it's been a great weekend.
Millennial Friday, you would go so far to say as millennial.
It felt that way. I mean, at least the first half felt that way.
I would say the first quarter definitely felt that way with the beautiful first drive down the field, the perfect form tackle causing the fumble, and then the immediate cut to the throat strike, touchdown pass to Mitch Matthews. That was euphoric.
It was like the UCLA game all over again. That's what came into my brain.
Like, this is what it feels like to be watching football in the Celestial Kingdom.
Yeah, except for all the penalties. I don't think there's that many rules.
there's no rules, there's no penalties, there's no referees in our Celestial Kingdom football, which we'll be talking about on another podcast at a later date. So quickly recapping this game against UConn, a lot of very good things, a lot of positives. I think after last year, I think me and you discussed this last week, how the result that we wanted, no matter what, was just a victory. We didn't care if it was by 2 points or 200 points. We just wanted to leave with a W. And I think after the first half, a lot of fans were very pleased. But then after the second half, not so much, just because it was the sense that, oh, we could have done so much more. But we'll kind of talk about that a little bit later. First of all, let's just talk about Taysom Hill and his play. I thought it was very consistent and exactly what we needed to see coming from the offseason.
Absolutely. It looked like he made the next step in his maturity as a quarterback. Totally sure of himself, sure of the offense, and trusting in his receivers, even some of them, like Jordan Leslie and others who made catches for the first time as BYU players. You know, trusting in his teammates. It was a great step forward, and I think another sign that this could be a big year for the big man.
Absolutely. And I love his composure in the sense that every single time that he didn't see something downfield and he didn't see something right away, he wasn't forcing any of those throws. I think there were probably two or three in the second half where it was either a place where the guy was going to catch it or no one was. Or it was just a simple, okay, I'm not going to try and run for 2 yards and break my leg, or I'm not going to try and force this ball downfield. There was a lot, I mean, you could sense that he was very much more a mature quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. I think the best example of that would be that touchdown pass to Taron Houck, where he stepped up in the pocket, felt the pressure, rolled left, set his feet, threw just a dart right on the money, right, you know, and Taron Houck goes down the sideline for a touchdown. But last season, Taysom's going to run that. And he's going to run it for 15 yards. It's going to be a first down. But this is he's realizing that he can be effective using his arm in the same way that he is absolutely 100% sure he can be effective hurting defenses with his legs. And that is really what he needed to do to make the next step as a quarterback. And it's great to be able to see it come to fruition in week one.
Yeah. And I think that the fact that he's trusting his arm a little bit more, and like you said, and you can notice this when he's rolling out to pass, we have those designed rollouts or even just the straight dropbacks. Last year, it was he would probably hold onto the ball for about maybe 4-5 seconds, and then he would automatically just go straight. Instead of checking it down, he would just run it. This year, he's using those shorter intermediate routes and being okay with checking down or just extending himself along so he could throw that, you know, touchdown pass to Taron Houck. Or even there was a 30-yard pass that he threw later on in the game where he really just extended the play, waited for things to develop. And as a wide receiver, you have to love that. You have to love your quarterback's ability to give you more time to get separation, which historically BYU's wide receivers have not been able to do. So when you have a mobile quarterback who's able to, you know, extend the play in the backfield, that gives you so much more time to get off the defensive back and get open. So it's amazing to see his progression there. More impressive play from Taysom Hill. I think we'll be seeing a lot of this. Just he does a lot of wow things. Was it that scramble TD pass to Taron Houck or the second touchdown run that he had in the fourth quarter where he just turned on the Jets and then stiff arm number seven and on his way to the end zone.
I'm going to go with the former, but that doesn't mean that the latter wasn't tremendous. The scramble touchdown was just Taysom being Taysom. I mean, that guy is just a pretty amazing combination of speed and strength, you know. Whereas Manziel and guys like that, you know, are quick, but Manziel's not going to run anyone over. The last guy I can think, you know, there are two guys that came into my mind thinking about just big, big formed quarterbacks with the ability to run the way he does. And, you know, not to be too hyperbolic here, but Cam Newton, Terrell Pryor, those are the two guys I can think of, you know, in the past who have had that kind of dynamic capability to make the plays with their legs, with being so tall and having such a long stride.
There was a run that Cam Newton had where I remember after he, I think it was against Alabama, where he just shredded the defense. He made a few cuts, and then he turned on the Jets to score this touchdown. And then right after it happened, I think everyone declared that was the Heisman moment for Cam Newton. And this was a very, very poor man's version of that run. But Taysom's ability, I think I like the touchdown run a little bit better just because it was so dynamic in the sense that you see him run, he makes a beautiful jump cut to avoid one of the defenders, and then he turns on the Jets, and you see the cornerback, who is generically the very fastest player on the field, you see him just get completely outrun by Taysom, and then the fact that Taysom, for good measure, just completely shoves him off to the side as the guy tries to give him an arm tackle is just, it was beautiful. It was, like you said, it was celestial.
Yeah,
it was millennial.
It was. Bring it on. If you could hide a collab, start it right now.
We should start. I mean, I think I'm going to start singing it when I'm going to be in Texas for the game, and I'm sure I can get a few BYU fans to join with me.
Hey, you know, I'll be there too. We should do a little podcast, you know, a little pregame or postgame podcast, you know, for all of our tens of listeners out there, and they can feel in the goodness.
It would be like College Game Day, but for maybe three people.
Yeah, yeah. My dad, your dad, and some random guy on Twitter.
I think we have a plan here. Talking about the defense from UConn, played well, only gave up, you know, 10 points. Didn't dominate the way that we know that the BYU defense can dominate. I don't think that we were expecting it, obviously, with a few of our starters out and a few other key defensive players out as well. What were some areas of improvement that you would like to see from the defense moving into Texas next week?
Well, I think it's hard for me to pick on the rush defense, considering they only gave up about 2 yards, a little over 2 yards per carry. But I was a little surprised that UConn was able to run up the middle. With Travis Tuiloma back, Graham Rowley back, I thought that the anchor of the defensive line would be a little stronger. And obviously, like I said before, that the rushing yards weren't the problem, but UConn is a terrible football team.
Yeah.
So that's only going to be tested more with Texas, because Texas, although they did lose their starting center today, it seems like with the broken ankle, they're going to try to push BYU around up front in a way that they could then be able to get out, you know, on the edges. So I would like to see that increase. I'd like to see the run defense be shored up just a little bit up the middle.
Yeah, no, I would say the same thing. It didn't seem like we were really stout right up the middle. There were some times where they were able to get, you know, 5-6 yards at a time. And I think that we kind of gained that back with some, you know, good plays in the backfield there. But the key thing for me and what I noticed particularly, and I know that these are supposed to be our two studs on defense. We talked a little bit about Bronson Kafusi last week. But it seems to me that Bronson Kafusi and Alani Fua are kind of statues when it comes to pass defense and being very athletic on the outside. They show flashes of brilliance, right? I mean, Bronson, a couple sacks and some very nice plays. He's going to be a great end rusher, but when he gets out in space, he does not look nearly as good. I mean, obviously, it's so hard to compare him to Kyle Van Noy because, you know, Kyle Van Noy was an all-world player for us. But when you take someone who was a former defensive lineman and have him try to fill that role, it's going to be very tough for him to make plays out in space and cover essentially from the tackle box out to the sideline where he's supposed to be covering that flat in that defense. I'm just curious to see how they're going to develop. And I know people talk about Alani Fua being very athletic. It seems to me, maybe you've seen this, maybe you haven't, but it seems that Alani Fua is good for two very athletic plays, but for the rest of the time, it seems like he's kind of taking plays off.
I don't know if I could speak to the taking plays off, but I definitely think that we miss the kind of wowing athletic force and athleticism. You know, that definition is so subjective because, you know, Bronson Cafusi is every bit as athletic as Kyle Van Noy, considering he's 6'7", like 600 pounds. So he's every bit as athletic, but I agree, out in space, they don't exactly look like they have the kind of playmaker out in space as they had before, which means that maybe BYU uses more of the nickel in those kinds of situations, because I was very impressed with the secondary, especially guys like Mike Davis and Sky Povey, who I thought were there and who made a lot of plays in the open field, defended numerous pass attempts. Maybe that's the key if BYU's struggling to defend in space.
And kind of speaking to that depth that you were talking about, you know, the fact that we had two cornerbacks step up, and, you know, to their very best offensive player was, I believe, Jeremy Davis was their wide receiver, and he definitely made some plays. I think he had 7 catches on 13 targets, but it wasn't like they were a huge force. And I mean, speaking about those two guys and some other guys on offense, very impressive depth from this BYU team. Was there any specific player that you saw where you're like, wow, I'm, or a specific position where you're saying we are going to be good this year because we were able to see what the 2 and 3 guys looked like?
Corner, I think, was the first one that came up for the two players that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. But I was also really happy to see Zach Stout have a great game. 10 tackles. You know, he's lumped in the same category as, you know, the Jake Heaps, Ross Oppo, Iggy's pre-Heisman Trophy / 3-time NCAA champion press conference.
Yep.
He left school, had to reapply, has kind of never really been able to be a consistent contributor on defense. And to have him in game one lead the team in tackles was just an evidence to the kids' desire to finish strong. And they know that he does have this talent, and that, you know, I'm sure he probably regrets the whole Iggy's shenanigans. But if he can continue to fill that place in the middle, BYU's inside linebackers shouldn't have any problems.
Absolutely. And I was really impressed with the wide receiver depth, and specifically with Mitch Juergens. And that one catch and run that he had that got called back for a holding penalty, or hands to the face, which was even marginal at best, but that kid can scoot. You know, he can. I mean, I think that, I mean, a lot of people are saying J.D. Falslev, you know, you found a guy to fill your shoes, and that's going to take, I mean, I don't think that's completely, you know, fulfilled yet, but I love the way that he got open, and he made some really nice plays for the team. And we're not even seeing, I mean, to think that the better, I mean, Ashanti Blackman is going to be coming in next week and what he'll be able to do. I think that we have I was always kind of doubting I might have mentioned this last week, how well the wide receivers can really transition in, but it seems like we got a really good, really solid group there.
Yeah, and I agree with the Juergens comment, because that is exactly how J.D. Falslev became J.D. Falslev. They just threw him a couple passes, and he just made plays.
Yep.
And he's the Wes Welker type. He is a white guy, and he is shorter than 6 foot, and he usually catches passes over the middle, which is basically all you need to be Wes Welker. Yep. And you don't even need to be good. You just need to have those characteristics. But, yeah, I was surprised, considering, you know, no Blackmon, no Kurtz, no Trey Dye, which was interesting. I mean, I think he played, but I don't think he had any catches. Ross Oppo was nowhere to be found. So to have guys who maybe some BYU fans had never even heard of having quality games, quality performances in lieu of all those people that were missing or missing in action, it's great, great news moving forward for the wide receiver depth, which has been BYU's Achilles heel since Austin Colley left.
Yeah. Well, and I still have, you know, the terrible memory that one Chris Hale was a starting Division I wide receiver for our BYU football program at one time. And just to think that how completely different our wide receivers have been since is great.
And on the other side of Chris Hale during that season was Rod Wilkerson. So BYU had two guys named, a guy named Rod and a guy named Chris as their receivers. But we've come a long way.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing BYU football is. One of the things kind of talked about earlier, there's a little bit of a slowdown in the second half. We jumped on them. We had 28 points in the first half. Everyone was hoping for 50 plus. Are you concerned with the fact that we weren't able to really put together a full, complete blowout? Or are you fine with the fact that maybe we kind of called off the dogs there in the second half?
I'm fine with it. ESPN won't let you forget, college football doesn't have a preseason. But that's why. I mean, I don't think you can expect a team to put together four terrific quarters in a row in one game. In fact, I don't think BYU did that once last year, except maybe the Boise State game was a pretty complete win.
Yeah.
But I think the third quarter letdown was a little bit more, you know, we beat ourselves is so ridiculously laughable and cliche. But those two turnovers that BYU had in the third quarter were the only thing that was stopping the offense moving down the field at will. Now, obviously, turnovers are you beating yourself, and the opposing team does cause those on occasion. But it wasn't schematic. It wasn't play calling to me, except maybe one third down they ran up the middle. But that's just I think Robert and I needs to just have one third down, one where he just runs it up the middle and gets stuffed just to get his blood pumping. He has to have one of those per game.
Yep.
But other than that, I think schematically, play calling wise, I don't think there was anything that I think was systemic that we would have to worry about going into week two.
No, I thought it was, like you said, those two turnovers kind of hurt us, and that's, you know, nature of the beast. I think, you know, you get out there the first game, you're hitting guys that are not your own guys, are used to being hit in fall camp, and things are a little different. So hopefully that needs to be cleaned up in the second game playing against Texas. But nothing that I'm overly concerned with. I think there are a few BYU fans who, you know, the doomsdayers, who are just kind of like, oh, here we go again, just like last year. We're not going to be able to play a complete game. But, you know, when you get into those situations, Robert and I is not going to open up the playbook when we're up 28-7. You know, he's not going to really just start slinging it out there when we're up by that many points. So, you know, I'm fine with it. We got the W. We got out of there. Last thing about this game we want to talk about on a more sour note, the kicking game does not exactly look like it's going to be our strong point this year. Even a little bit.
Yikes.
I mean, did we get a kickoff that went beyond the 15-yard line? Like, did we even get close to the 10 on any of our kickoffs?
No, I don't believe so. And my hope, and maybe Bronco can speak to this more, would be that they are trying to direct, they are using the directional kick, and maybe they're kicking it short because they want to try to pin him into the corner. If that's what's happening, fine, but that's not what I saw. I saw a kicker unable to get it past the 15-yard line on a consistent basis. And against someone like UConn, that's probably not going to hurt BYU. But when you have, when we play teams with actual athletes, that could be a problem because, you know, you get a running start from the goal line up to the 15. You're already motoring as you catch it. That's bad news for the kick coverage team.
Yeah. No, it's something that, I mean, that's plagued BYU, I think, for a while. In the sense that when you don't have a kicker who can really just like knock it out of the end zone, you have to just rely on your coverage team to really get down there. And there, I mean, even on the very first one, they returned it for, you know, I think they returned it quite a good distance. And there are a couple of times after that as well. So at some point, I mean, maybe this is just terrible of me to think about this, but if it comes to a point where we're giving up that many yards on a kickoff return, I'd say just kick it out of bounds.
You're going to take it out on the 40, or they're going to return it to the 40, and with a chance to run the distance, I don't know. I think you might take the former or the latter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it'll ever get to that point, but hopefully they will figure it out and get to a point where they can either really just shore up that, you know, that that kickoff coverage, or find someone who can just really kick it out of the end or kick it deep or anything like that. So moving ahead to Texas. There's so much that's been talked about in the offseason, at least from the Texas side. I have a good number of friends that went to the University of Texas, and it seems like within their fan base, on the Longhorn Network, Mac Brown, all their players, they remember that game because that was the gash that started all of the bleeding and all of the mess. I mean, Manny Diaz getting fired. Eventually, Mac Brown getting fired. That was the game that essentially blew that football program up. And they're looking, I mean, they've circled it and they've made it known. So now that we're kind of essentially the hunted here, what do you think the mentality is for our team going in?
It reminds me a little bit of Alma the Younger, you know? Alma the Younger returning to Ammonihah. They consider themselves superior to outsiders, you know?
Yep.
They glory in the strength of their city. They consider it indestructible. You know, they won't listen. They've been taught once. They've now, Tavesism has been commanded to return. So we'll see. We'll see if he'll have a friend, because I think he needs Amulek.
He needs
Amulek, because he needs someone to step up. He's not going to be able to do it himself. My guess is that Texas is going to put 8 guys in the box, and they're going to say, you're not beating us. Your receivers, who were terrible last year, are going to have to beat us. Jamal Williams is not beating us. So if you can pass, then go ahead, because we're going to stack the box. And that's why I think that Devon Blackman can be such a difference maker, because they literally don't have any idea who this guy is.
That's true. They have zero film on him. They probably know that, oh, he's just, you know, another wide receiver coming off the bench for these guys.
Yeah, no game film, except maybe, you know, a couple of years ago. I don't know if he played, I think, a few times with Oregon. But it reminds me a little bit of, and this might go back to our earlier comments on Robert and I's play calling in the second half. I don't know if you remember when BYU played a little team called Tulsa back in 2007, and my man crush, Gus Malzahn, was the offensive coordinator. And in game one, Tulsa didn't run anything, really, that was anything like that they had been practicing. It was the most granola game plan you can possibly imagine.
Yep.
And then they played BYU, and dang.
They came out guns blazing.
And I remember, yeah, and I remember Broncos halftime interview. It was one of the most honest interviews. He's just like, we didn't see any of this. We can't stay with them athletically. We're going to have to re-scrap whatever schemes we have, because they aren't working. And my hope is that they have some things ready for Texas that will be play off the zone read that works so well in Provo. Some zone read, maybe slip screens, zone reads, wheel routes, you know, something like that to really get Blackman the ball. Because if BYU can find a way to make plays at the wide receiver position against Texas, I think BYU has a good chance to win the game.
I think that, I mean, if we're able to continue to use every square inch and make sure that we're really attacking every part of the field, then I think that will be fine, you know, and really spreading it out to the wide receivers, attacking in between the tackles with our running backs. I think that we'll be able to have great success there. Just kind of looking at the opponent a little bit, David Ash in Texas, looking at them, didn't really look dominant or impressive even at all against North Texas. I have no idea how great North Texas is. Maybe they have a fantastic defense and a terrible offense. Texas won, I believe, was 38-7. But I'm wondering, you know, like, if it was just one of those games where Texas, maybe they came in with a very vanilla playbook, or maybe they, you know, just really didn't have that much. I remember Charlie Strong in his post-game conference yesterday said, you know, oh no, that was our entire playbook. You know, we're just not that good. And maybe he's being a little self-deprecating there. But any thoughts about, you know, this Texas team that we're going to see and what we might, you know, what they're going to try to do to us on Saturday?
Well, my guess is that, like you said, I don't know if Coach Strum is being disingenuous or just playing a little cat mouse game, but I'd be surprised if that was all they had from the offensive scheme standpoint. David Ash is back. He's a year older. He's healthy. And then Texas is always going to have playmakers at the skill positions. It's just going to be incumbent on BYU to be able to not give up the big play. It sounds cliche, but if BYU can just play as they usually do in these kinds of games, just make them be methodical, make the opponent drive down, you know, an 8, 9, 10 play drive to score points, and then, you know, buff up when you get into the red zone. I think that's BYU's plan of success and plan of attack. It doesn't matter, you know, the good old blue hair, it's only in the afternoons, it's not in the afternoons guy anymore, is going to say, they need to get up on those receivers. Those corners need to be closer. It's like, well, if you want them closer, you're going to have them go by you. So
yeah.
Would you rather have them make a third down and 11 play where they catch it for 12 yards? Or would you rather have on second and 6 them, you know, out and up you and get a touchdown? So sometimes BYU just has to play within their system, and I think they have the corners to be able to make plays and tackles in space and prevent Texas from getting in the open field. That's the hope anyway.
Yep, and they just got to be strong up the middle. As long as they can be strong up the middle and not give up any big chunks of yards on the ground in between the tackles, I think that will, you know, I think that will be fine there. Because what happens is once they start gashing us up the middle, then we start bringing in, you know, more blitzes on the outside. Our two defensive ends start crashing a little bit harder, and they can just completely, you know, open things up on the edges of the field and start going crazy with the type of athletes that they do have. I'm thinking, you know, that BYU can absolutely win this game. They should go with the mentality of like, yes, this is our game and we can absolutely win it. This is not a team that's going to dominate. They should just say, you know what, look what we did to them last year. Look what we're able to do. Let's just take care of business and see this as a business trip.
Yeah, I agree. I think that last time they went to Texas, you know, they lost 17-16, but they had a pretty good first half lead. And like you said, in the second half, or in the fourth quarter especially, when BYU couldn't stop the run, that's when they lost the game. It wasn't the athletes of Texas that were just going crazy. It was in the trenches. And so, you know, it's on Travis Tuiloma, Remington Peck, Graham Rowley, and all those guys on the up front to really hold the line up front and help BYU to move to 2-0.
Yep. And feeling pretty optimistic. We'll see what happens this Saturday. Kind of talking about just the general landscape of college football in general. We were kind of talking earlier before the podcast started. It was the most glorious time of the year. We could spend literally 14 hours of Saturday just glued to our TVs watching the gift of God that is college football. Any specific takeaways, any really big surprises for you from the weekend?
Well, I think it was surprising that Alabama and Florida State, who are both at least 2 touchdown, and in the Alabama game, almost 4 touchdown favorites, struggled, you know, deep into the fourth quarter, and the game was not at hand against, you know, West Virginia and Oklahoma State. So kudos to both those teams for coming out. And I'm a hopeless romantic with teams who are written off, who no one thinks can do anything. They're just there to, you know, as Denny Green, you say, they crown their ass, you know. That's not what the game's played. And I like when teams really show up and say, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Alabama. I don't care if you're the defending champs, Florida State. We got a good team. We're going to hit you in the mouth. And yeah. I love the Oklahoma State game for that reason, because Oklahoma State never gave up. And West Virginia never gave up. They just stopped making plays later in the fourth quarter. But I think that's a kind of an evidence that the parity of college football, that even teams who you would say, who's number one, who's number two, it's going to be Alabama and it's going to be Florida State. If they can struggle in a neutral site game opening week, that I think the college football landscape is open to more teams to knock on the door to get to that Final Four, that maybe not BYU, but other teams.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I am a believer that the very first week of the season, it's kind of hard to tell. But that aside, the fact that we're able to see a UVA team, which we all know is not a very good team, challenge UCLA. I mean, they only lost by 8 points in Charlottesville. And everyone was talking about UCLA, Brett Hundley being a Heisman candidate, their defense being all world. I mean, they only scored one offensive touchdown, UCLA did. And I know, I mean, I live, you know, minutes away from UCLA's campus, and I know there's a lot of people over there that are pretty nervous because, you know, they're going to have to face a pretty daunting Pac-12 schedule. So the fact that happened, even the Wisconsin-LSU game, people thought that, you know, this is just, you know, speaking of conferences, obviously people talk about the SEC being dominant, but Wisconsin should have won that game. They were up big. And then in the second half, LSU just kind of came back on them. But, you know, Melvin Gordon, I think he only had 2 carries in the second half.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And that's, you know, they completely miffed how something like that happens. But I think the big takeaway is there's a huge amount of parity, like you said. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to really toot my horn on this one, because I actually bet in your little onions game, I bet a huge money that Rutgers would lose. But the fact that the State University of New Jersey, which I'm a proud native resident of,
they alma beat mater, wise and glorious.
Not exactly alma mater, but I will take an honorary Greg Schiano degree from Rutgers. They went over and they beat Washington State, a vaunted Pac-12 team with a great offensive coach. I mean, Gary Nova, who is a terrible, terrible quarterback. He is the absolute worst thing that has ever happened to New Jersey. He threw for, like, goodness, I don't even, like, 300 plus yards and so many touchdowns. It was crazy. And so it's great to see that there is parity. And I also love seeing USC be good again because I love Steve Sarkisian. I hated the regime that was there before. I did not like Lane Kiffin. It was not a huge – I mean, I enjoyed watching Pete Carroll's teams, but I'm glad that Steve Sarkisian is bringing the Trojans back to glory there. So
yeah, I think that first half of that Fresno State-USC game was proof to every USC fan around that Steve Sarkisian is not Lane Kiffin.
Oh, yeah. He is not messing around. And Lane Kiffin – it was so funny. There were so many great shots and even animated GIFs of Lane Kiffin reacting to his Alabama offense over the weekend. So we'll see how that progresses. Seeing him and Nick Saban on the sideline together is quite the sight. One very important topic and maybe unimportant topic of the week: college football started this weekend, which means the debut of all these terrible university-sponsored commercials. We all know the famous BYU singing girl running in slow motion across campus.
Studio C girl, yeah.
Yeah, Studio C girl. I mean, I think that one was the most hated thing BYU has ever produced. Was there any specific ones that you saw throughout this weekend that maybe matched that in sheer terribleness?
I think the LSU one was pretty bad.
That was the one that I was going to say. The girl opening the mailbox?
Yeah, that was just... You're in advertising. You tell me what was wrong with that, because as a consumer, yikes.
Well, it's funny because you know exactly what happened in the meeting where the creative was presented. You know that the board of directors at LSU or the administrators, they're like, well, we want to create something here that's going to, we want them to get excited about coming to LSU. And we just really want, we got to have their parents involved because we want the parents on board. Okay, good, check, we got that. Let's showcase our athletic prowess with the cheerleaders and the fun stuff there. And let's get our tiger there too. And then let's make sure that we show some people studying, because we're an educational university here too, here at LSU. We're not just a fun football school. Let's have some people holding up some beakers and then, you know, have this metaphor of home. That sounds like a great idea, right? And you just know, I mean, every single university president, they want the same things. Like, we want to show this as an educational facility. We want to show people having fun. How do we do that? You just see the stereotypes in every single one of these commercials. I think the only really good commercial that I've seen was actually for Texas. It was done by GSDNN. There's an agency in Austin that's pretty close, tied to the university. And it was just like a shot of the skyline. And I believe it was like Walter Cronkite or someone doing the VO. And it's just like really simple voiceover talking about the university and saying, you know, you're going to start your day, you're going to start your, you know, journey of glory here at Texas. You're going to start them with some breakfast tacos, and that might be different, but you're going to like it. And it was just something that was very simple. It wasn't like, here's our wonderful chemistry lab that we spent millions of dollars on, and here's our football stadium, and here's people in the library studying, having a responsible, fun time.
You got to have the people out on the grass, you know, with... looking at each other fondly, enjoying their educational experience that they're having, studying public speaking 101 and just enjoying life, you know?
Yeah, and it's always a very colorful mix of students. We have to be very politically correct.
Yes, I mean, this is Fisher versus the University of Texas is currently upheld racial profiling in university admissions. So, yes, absolutely.
Maybe I will make an official university commercial bingo card.
Do it.
I think I'll make that happen. So we're actually running a little short on time. We were going to give you guys some of our cultural input, but we're running short here. But thank you again for joining on this podcast. Zach, thank you for your wonderful insight to the game of football and everything else. It's been a fantastic week.
We will see each other in just 6 days' time.
In Austin, Texas, we'll get some Franklin's barbecue and we'll do our game day version of the podcast.
That sounds great.
Awesome. Great stuff. Thanks again, everyone.